Good day. Welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail with Mark Amaru Pinkham. This program will explore the secrets behind the Knights Templar and other secret mysteries of the world today. Now, here's your host, Mark Amaru Pinkham.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Guardians of the Holy Grail, the program dedicated to diving deep to uncover and expose the truth behind the Knights Templar, secret societies, and the ancient Holy Grail mysteries. The Guardians of the Holy Grail program was created by me to clear up many of the popular misconceptions regarding the secret societies, the Holy Grail mysteries, and the bloodline from Jesus and Mary Magdalene. Through this show, I hope to set the record straight with hard facts from authors and researchers, as well as with testimonials from current and past members of the Knights Templar, Freemasonry, and other initiatic societies. I myself am a Knight Templar of the International Order of Gnostic Templars, which was founded to revive the mystical rites and wisdom of the original Knights Templar, which over the centuries has been either lost or ignored. You can learn about our Gnostic Templar organization and sign our mailing list so you can receive our monthly e-news. You can do all that by visiting our website at www.gnostictemplars.org. And you can also sign up for our 18-lesson Gnostic Templar e-course there. You can become an associate member. And you can listen to a series of podcasts I've done about the Knights Templar and their connection to other secret societies and the Holy Bloodline and so forth and so on. During today's show, if you have any questions that you would like to ask our guest, feel free to call our toll-free number at 866-472-5795. Today is a show I've been looking forward to for some time because we're going to be talking about history, but in a different way than you're used to hearing it. Today we're going to be discussing some evidence that history is not what is written down in the textbooks. It's really something else, and we're finding that out these days. Today's discussion comes on the heels of a movement that began in the 1990s with the publication of the popular book known as Forbidden Archaeology that was written by Michael Cremo and Richard Thompson. Some of you might know this book. It was a very groundbreaking book when it came out because it revealed that there are literally hundreds of archaeological artifacts that have been discovered throughout the last few hundred years that the public knows literally nothing about because they didn't fit into the current paradigm of what history was supposed to be all about. Many of these artifacts were simply hidden away someplace, like perhaps the Smithsonian Institute, or they've been debunked and ridiculed by authorities of the archaeological community, like the Leakeys, and then relegated to the scrap heap because there was no funding to accurately test or date them at that point. Now, today we will be speaking with someone who's not afraid to speak out about the enigmatic artifacts of the world, and in fact, even travels around the world and displays them in exhibitions. Our guest today is Klaus Dohna, a museum curator from Vienna, Austria, who some years ago realized that many museum artifacts he came across in his work could not be explained in light of popular history. Klaus then began traveling around the world collecting these artifacts from such countries as Ecuador and Colombia, Mexico, the U.S., France, Japan, Sierra Leone. Over time, Klaus has been able to gather more than 2,500 of these artifacts, which today he refers to as umparts, which is short for out-of-place artifacts. There are 470 of these umparts that Close currently travels around with and displays on exhibition. And I'm hoping that one of these days I'm actually going to be able to see that exhibition. I imagine it's quite amazing. I recently saw Klaus on a YouTube video that was produced by Project Camelot. And if you haven't seen him, if you haven't seen that video, you definitely ought to check it out. It's really amazing. One thing that struck me about Klaus is his humble character and of course, his pivotal work that he's doing. If you'd like to know more about Klaus, you can visit his website, which is www.unsolved-mysteries.info. So greetings, Klaus. Welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail.
Good evening, Mark. Good afternoon. We have a few hours time difference.
Well, good evening to you and good afternoon to me. Klaus, are you currently exhibiting your oomparts any place right now?
No, it's not that easy, and I don't do it many times because it always takes the time to prepare. And first of all, you have to find an organizer who is doing it in foreign country. Because I just bring all those oomparts together and I present the exhibition. But it has to be done in every foreign country. Only in Vienna I did it by myself.
So where have you exhibited your oomparts up until now?
We started 2001 in Vienna, and this exhibition, we had also a conference where Michael Cremo gave us the honor to be here, and he spoke about several artifacts, but he also had a good chance to see some of the artifacts he wrote about in his book, Life in Our Exhibition. Then a few years later, we went to Switzerland, then to Berlin, and 2 years ago to Korea. That's all until now.
Well, do you have any plans for future exhibitions? Sorry?
It's not easy to do it. It's always a lot of logistic and everything because we have... I do not collect pieces. I just lend the pieces to show on display, and then all the pieces have to go back to each country because the pieces belong to the owners and to each country.
Right. Well, it sounds like a huge undertaking. Do you have any plans for any future exhibitions?
Maybe we have a chance next year in Japan, but it is not for sure yet.
Well, of course, the one thing I want to know is when you're going to come over to America. That's, you know, because I want to see that exhibition myself.
I would appreciate to be able to come to United States, but then we would need an organization who is able to do this exhibition in United States. I would be able to bring all those pieces for sure.
So you need to get an organization to underwrite the exhibition?
To hold the exhibition, because financial-wise, I would not be able to do this.
Right. Well, I imagine that you could probably do that in a bigger city, like Los Angeles or New York, where the organizers know that they were going to get their funding back.
Yes.
But I hope it happens soon.
Would be great anyway.
Well, Klaus, you were initially very skeptical about these strange artifacts as being something, you know, very unique, and something along the line changed your mind. Was it one artifact that changed your mind, or was it a group of them, or what was it that, you know?
No, several.
Several.
Because the idea was, I was really one of the biggest skeptical persons, and I read many books about some strange artifacts, and I didn't believe that it's possible that those artifacts are real original. So I had one day the idea, why not trying to bring those pieces to Vienna and show them in an exhibition. And we started only trying to get pieces out of museums, and a friend of mine, a museum director, he wrote lending requests to all those museums worldwide, and out of 350 pieces, Mark, how many do you think we could get?
Not a lot, huh?
One.
One piece.
And all the others we could not lend because of they need them by themselves, or they are not in a good condition for traveling and so on. So we had only 1.5 years left to until the opening of the exhibition, and I already signed the lending contract. So everybody told me I should give up, and then I said, no, now we start searching from our side, by ourselves. And I traveled several times to South America, Mexico, United States, through internet, telephone. Finally, after 1.5 years, at the day of the opening, we could present 470 pieces. And so many, many of them never were published before.
So when you sent out your letters to these various museums, did you just simply say, send us your most enigmatic artifact that you...
No. We researched. Where are some strange artifacts?
Oh, and so, then, you know where they were.
My friend, as a museum director, wrote to his colleagues or to the curators of the departments, and he asked them if it would be possible to lend those artifacts for an exhibition called Unsolved Mysteries.
Well, is there any countries that you've been able to get these umparts from that are just the most strange and enigmatic umparts?
From museums, not, but from some private collections, and even in South America, also from some museums. Yes, really very interesting pieces. And I still was skeptical, and we tried to get the some scientists to check those pieces. It was not easy to find some of them, but finally we could do several checks, and each piece was checked, was not a fraud, it was original. For example, some pieces from Colombia made out of lidite, it's I don't know exactly how you call it in English, it's a black stone, very hard, nearly the same hardness like granite, and the structure of these stones is like leaves. That means the stone is very hard, but very easy to break. And we got the help of the real top expert on precious stone and stonework. We did the material check, and then he checked each piece. And after checking those pieces, he just told me, I cannot tell you who made those things. I cannot tell you how did they do it, but the only thing I can tell you is we are not able to do the same pieces in our days from the same material. So that means nobody knows what kind of culture civilization did those artifacts, and especially how did they make those artifacts. Nobody can explain it. So then, from time to time, it made me changing my mind, and I have to say, until now we did not have one time a fraud in any research.
Well, Klaus,
but still a lot of open questions.
Klaus, did people around the world contact you to come over to see the artifacts they had, or did you just research what was out there and then you went to these places?
I was researching, and some of the most incredible pieces I found just through good luck.
Well, it sounds like you've had a lot of that.
Yes.
Well, it must be hard to date a lot of these artifacts that you found, especially the ones that are stone artifacts, I would imagine.
Stone artifacts, stone, you cannot age dating. This is the biggest problem. You can only have some specialists looking if there are some minerals inside the encarvings, and from that point you can say those pieces are new made or real old. But exactly how old on stones you cannot check out. And most of the real strange artifacts are made out of stone, because stone doesn't change the surface.
Right.
It's the only material, precious stone, and stones are not changing the surface.
Right.
That's why they can be very, very old.
So they could potentially be hundreds of thousands or millions of years old. There's no way to tell, right?
That's right.
That's
the biggest problem because, yes?
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Mark.
Well, I want to ask you some questions about these uparts. Are there any of them that you've come across that seem to reveal that humans may have had extraterrestrial contact in the past?
For that, I don't have the approval. So I wouldn't say anything which I could not prove. Could be, but also could not be.
Well, there's been some artifacts that have the shape of ships, right? Or vehicles that they could have, extraterrestrials could have traveled throughout the universe, right?
Looks like could be, yes, but as I said, it's very hard to say so, because then everybody will say, yeah, prove it. I mean, there are many artifacts which are very, very strange, but still, there are two possibilities. Either there was once a very high civilization on Earth already, or maybe there was a contact with extraterrestrials. But until now, I don't think that anybody has a real guarantee or the approvement.
Hmm. Well, have you ever come across an artifact that was made out of a substance, a mineral, or a metal that's not indigenous to this world?
We got one, and we had a test in Austria at the Atomic Institution, and the material was nearly pure, in English, just a moment, my English is not that perfect, Mark. I have to think, silicium, and 0.01% of the material they could not analyze.
Oh, really? Very interesting. Well, I remember watching in your YouTube video, you talked about some uparts that seem to confirm the existence of these motherland continents and the Atlantic and Pacific of Atlantis and Lemuria. Can you talk about that?
Yes, of course. First of all, very interesting is the research from Professor Masaaki Kimura in Japan on the big stone monuments under the sea level, about 20 to 25 meters under the sea level. There are several huge monuments. One of it is like a stadium, like a colosseum with rows and stairs. That means it shows that these monuments must have sunken, concerning Professor Kimura, about 10 to 12,000 years ago. Then in Ecuador, we found a very strange collection. The most strange piece is a big, big granite stone, and on this stone you have the world map engraved, and there is one eye inlay where today is about the Near East, Israel, Syria, and then a natural quartz line in this stone goes over the Mediterranean into the Atlantic Ocean, passes the Atlantic Ocean before the line goes over South America, and there you have in the Atlantic Ocean one continent, and then it continues down to the Bay of Guayaquil, Ecuador, and there is another inlay going, showing a little bit to the north of Guayaquil, today's Guayaquil, and there is another inlay, and this is the place where this stone and 350 other strange artifacts were found. And coming back to Professor Masaaki Kimura, he wrote a book few years ago, The Sunken Continent, and in this book he explains that once around 10,000-12,000 years ago, from the northeast Japanese island, which is now belonging to Russia, the Sakhalin Islands, far more down than Taiwan, there was once, upon his research, there was once a long continent. And exactly how he was explaining that in his book, this continent is also shown on this stone map. And there is another continent also in the Pacific Island. So what we see on this stone are three continents not existing in this style in our days. That means in the Atlantic Ocean, Edgar Cayce was talking about Atlantis, and Platon was also writing in former days about Atlantis in the Atlantic Ocean. And we have the so-called, or maybe part of the big sunken continent Mu, which where there are many, many histories, and even some big stone buildings still now on some of the Pacific islands, where nobody can really explain how they were made and from where they brought those big, big stones. So this stone map is really one of the most interesting artifacts I found until now. And at the same place, there was also a pyramid with a shining eye, meaning is, the eye inlay on this pyramid is gray, but if you put black light on this pyramid, the eye is really glowing, shining. And it has 13 steps. Exactly, it looks exactly the same like on the United States one, U.S. dollar. Very strange artifact. And on the bottom of this pyramid, you have the inlay of the Orion star constellation. And in an unknown writing until today, there was one person, a German professor, who could translate this language. And now an Italian professor is also able to do that. And this unknown writing we found on stones from all continents. That remembers, for example, on the Bible, there is written, until the building of the Tower of Babel, all humans spoke one language. There are stones with an unknown writing all over the world, on every continent. That means also on this pyramid, the same writing and the translation from Professor Kurt Schildmann, he passed away a few years ago, unfortunately. His translation was, "The Son of the Creator comes." So now, if I would say that we had contact with extraterrestrials, I could say there's the Orion constellation, and there is written, "The Son of the Creator comes." But what it really means, I have no explanation, Mark.
Well, this language that you found in different countries on the artifacts, I think you mentioned that it was in Easter Island and the Indus Valley, right?
No, Professor Schildmann told me that this writing is even older, and he called it pre-Sanskrit, and he said it has a light similarity to the Easter Island and to the Indus Valley writings.
Well, I've heard that there was a connection between the Easter Island, the writing, the Rongo Rongo script, and the Indus Valley script, as well as script that was used around the Lake Titicaca, apparently. So my thinking was that perhaps these places I found are in the past somehow connected to the Lemurian civilization, so perhaps this ancient language was the language of Mu.
That could be, or that there was even included Atlantis, because
mm-hmm.
nobody knows exactly when those continents were sunken.
Right. Well, I've been down to Peru many, many times because I'm been tour leader down there, and the shamans down there say that both the Atlanteans and Lemurians showed up in Peru in ancient times, and they helped to construct these big megalithic temples down there. So you have the influence, I guess, of both cultures in Peru. So it does make it a little difficult to distinguish, what comes from where, from that perspective.
I think, Mark, if there was a really global catastrophe, why not that both continents might have had trouble, and then some of those people went to east, some of them to west, and as you mentioned about Peru and also Bolivia, also several friends and elders told me, legends, that about the kingdom of Akakoa in Bolivia and all South America, about the white gods, and there are many, many stories, but we are searching, and in the very near future, I have the opportunity to see some new findings in Bolivia.
Well, Klaus, in your video, you had a plate there, a bronze plate. I guess you got it from Father Crispy's collection.
It was in former days in Father Crespi's collection, and when Father Crespi passed away, the padres from his colleagues, they had to sell many, many pieces, and the Banco Central in Cuenca, they asked several archaeologists to check those pieces and select the pieces. And those two plates, I do not own them. I have them in Vienna at the moment, but I do not own them. And those two plates, they were not accepted by the official archaeologists. So they are so-called modern pieces. But definitely, and I'm real very sure, that those two plates are not modern time made pieces. But on one of them, you see a human statue with a bird's head and big wings. And on the other one, you have, again, three stars. You have two snakes and a man with a very strange head and very strange clothes, and on his feet there are some tiles, symbols, which I did not yet see on any other artifact or photography or museum piece. Very strange.
Well, you said in your YouTube video that you thought that there might be a connection to Lake Titicaca, that perhaps this artifact came from that area?
As far as I know, it came from the Cuevas de los Tayos, which is a very huge underground tunnel system in Ecuador. But there is also another legend that there is a huge tunnel system connecting several South American countries. It's a very, very old legend.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Yeah, I've heard that. And in fact, they've recently discovered one of the tunnel openings in a Montagne Island in Lake Titicaca that if they can get the funds together, they're going to go inside of it and see what they can find. So I think that the tunnels might be opening up a bit more now.
I heard about it, and I heard also about another tunnel which is even going under the Lake Titicaca.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. The reason I was interested about that particular artifact is because the Aymara people and the Inca people have a lot of legends about the masters that came to them in ancient times that are associated with the serpent, you know, so I thought that maybe there was a connection there. One of the shamanic legends you may have heard is that the Incas claim, a lot of the shamans of the Inca civilization claim that in ancient times a Lemurian master named Aramumuru, which is, his name was also Amarumuru, meaning the serpent Muru, he came from Lemuria with a great solar disk, he came to Lake Titicaca, and from there he went into Peru, and he founded the Inca civilization and became known as Manco Capac. And then he put the great solar disk in the main temple of the Incas, Coricancha in Cusco. And so that's their legend, that they started from you know, the serpent masters. And which is interesting because, you know, for years I've been researching the serpent masters and the ancient legends of countries all over the world. And invariably you find that so many of them say the same thing, that they were founded by masters that were associated with the serpent, and also that their original priest kings were also serpents or dragons, you know. So you find that all over the world. Have you come across that yourself in your research?
Many, many times. And you just mentioned the snakes. Many of the real, very, very old artifacts, they have snakes on them.
Mm-hmm.
So that means the snake must have been very important in the past.
Well, it's obviously they looked upon it a different way than most of us do these days. And I guess it was a symbol of wisdom and a symbol of spiritual power and wisdom. Right, right.
Yes.
Well, which is one reason that, I have an affinity for the snake, which is one reason I have a motto as my middle name, which means snake. And one of my first book that I wrote was called Return of the Serpents of Wisdom, that has all these legends about the serpent masters as being the founders of all these different civilizations around the world. And if you're interested, I could actually send you a copy. It might save you from a lot of research on your own. It's got all those legends together.
Great.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that.
That would be great.
And yeah, I feel like we're on the same page. We're doing the same kind of work, maybe coming at it from a different angle, but we're doing the same kind of work. Looking into the past and trying to find the secret.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Mark?
Yes.
What I did not tell you yet, and also not on the internet, I'm honorable member of the Templarian Knights.
Huh, really? Well, I guess we do have a lot in common.
And?
No kidding.
I write you some informations about the pieces in Ecuador, which I mentioned before, because I do think they have to do something with the Templarian Knights.
Oh, you think so? Really? Wow, I'd really love to hear more about that. Do you have any photographs of your artifacts? You know,
of
the serpents
of
on
course.
Them, or the maps, the ancient maps of Atlantis or Lemuria. Do you have any photographs floating around of that?
I have, of course. I sent you.
Well, I'd love to see it because I don't know when I'm going to be able to see your exhibition.
If you find someone who would like to do it in the United States? You might be, of course.
Well, I'll definitely keep my eyes and ears open for that, because I would love to have you. My preference is that you'd come to Los Angeles to do it, because I live a lot closer to there than I do in New York. And then you could come and visit Sedona, which is famous for all kinds of mysteries about the ancient past here in America. And that's one reason I live here, because I have that interest of uncovering the mysteries. And but actually, a lot of the mysteries here are on another dimension. And unless you can open your psychic eye, you can't actually see them. But the thing about Sedona is that the energy is so powerful here that it supports you in opening up your psychic ability so that you can see these things. So it's quite an amazing place. So if you ever come to the States, I'd definitely like you to come visit here.
I will, definitely. I mean, I was invited once to a meeting from Wayne Deloria, who passed away. He was a great man. He wrote several books. He invited me to a 3 days meeting with 15 elders of the big tribes. And I had another invitation to Albuquerque, but at that time I couldn't afford to attend it, because they have also real great knowledge about the past and about the history. And I love to talk with those people, and especially I would like to talk with you personally and exchange a lot of information which I do not want to talk on the radio or in interviews.
Definitely. Well, we'll be in touch after the interview. So, during your conference that you had with the Native Americans, what exactly did you find out there?
The story of the 3 days meeting was giants and little people, and until this meeting, I had no information about giants and little people, and a few months later, I got already the first information, and then the second, third one. And the most interesting finding was in Ecuador, again Ecuador, the bones of a 20-foot giant, human giant. And Father Carlos Vaca found in 1964 a part of a mountain broke down, and the people found many bones, and they were scared about the size, and they called Father Carlos Vaca, who worked also in a hospital, and he collected the bones, and he researched on the bones, and he has 10 witnesses. I have a paper with 10 signatures witness that those bones are definitely from a 20-foot giant. So usually everybody would immediately say it's impossible, a giant cannot be 20 feet or even more, in meters, 7.6 meters. That's even more than 20 feet, I think.
Yeah.
I could bring a few of the bones with me to Austria, and I asked several experts to check on them. They were very surprised, because said two of the bones, they definitely are human, but it's impossible because they are at least five times taller than a normal human bone. And wow. There are old historical writings from Ecuador. For example, Chiesa de León, he wrote in the 16th century that they found on the coast of Esmeralda several human skeletons five times taller than they were. So giants, for me, giants really existed. There are so many facts. And you have legends about the giants all over the world. There is no country which has not legends about the giants. And Mark, I think in each of the legions is reality included.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, even in America, I attempted to write a book on giants a couple years ago. It's still in the back burner. I'm still working on it. But one thing I found in my research is that in the 1800s in America, there's about, you know, six or seven of our states here that they did excavations on Native American mounds. And in each of these excavations, they found skeletons that were 8 to 10 feet tall or long, indicating that our ancestors in America were very big. But you don't hear about that. You don't hear anything about
it. This is strange. I have many informations about that. It's very strange. And many times, even old newspaper reports I have from archives, copies, there is written about that 1800, 1900, and around 1920 it stops. And from then on, you don't hear many things about giant skeletons. But
right.
The people
That's right.
100 years ago, they could easily make a difference of an animal skeleton and a human skeleton. Don't you think so?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, absolutely. Well, I think what happened, Klaus, is that they made the mistake, and in some cases they made the mistake of calling in the Smithsonian Institute. And and when that happens, the bones mysteriously seem to just disappear.
And that, I think now afraid of showing those things.
Sorry, what?
Why they are so afraid of showing those things?
Well, because it goes against the grain. It goes against the standard paradigm of, you know, way things are supposed to be, right? You know, and from the start, the Smithsonian Institute has actually aligned itself with the most traditional histories, the most traditional academia, mm-hmm. and they don't want to look outside the box. They're afraid to look outside the box. They won't. They're afraid of losing their credibility, their funding, or whatever. But they won't do it. See, that's the problem. I mean, we even have a cave here in the Grand Canyon, which in the beginning of the 1900s, they found inside of it, they found all these Egyptian artifacts. They found mummies. They found hieroglyphs covering the walls. And then again, they called in Smithsonian Institute, and that was the end of that. You don't hear anything about it, and that was it. All you can do is go back in history and read some of the headlines that they talked about it, you know. But that was the end of it. So.
But while you say Egyptian pieces, I know the story about the Grand Canyon. The question again, Mark, could it be that those artifacts were, for example, from Atlantis culture or Mu culture?
No,
and later
they
on, they came down to Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
Because
able to really examine them. Klaus, I don't think anyone had a chance to examine them, so we don't really know for sure where they were from. How could we, you know?
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. But that's been my work, Klaus, is to find the ancient connections between the ancient civilizations of Mu and Lemuria and how they were the motherlands and how they were the beginning of civilization. And if you study the legends all over the world, they say that the original founders of their civilization came from someplace else. They came from motherlands around the world. And it's not just me, but many people have done this kind of research. There's one woman called Lucille Taylor Hansen. I don't know if you're familiar with her, but she wrote a book called The Ancient Atlantic, and she actually interviewed the peoples on either side of the Atlantic, and they all had the same story, that their civilizations were founded from masters that came from a continent in the Atlantic. All the Native Americans and the Tuareg people and the Berber people and the Basque people, they all said the same thing. Everybody said that, you know?
Yes.
And so we're all doing the same kind of work, but still we don't get any credibility from, you know, the archaeological or historical, you know, academia. We don't yet. I think that part of the problem is because that we don't have any kind of significant evidence like artifacts, which you have now. See, if these could be dated, if it could be proven that they came from places like Lemuria or Atlantis, you know, then we would have something that would back up our theories. But up until now, we haven't had anything, you see.
Oh, we have many things, Mark. I always say each artifact is one piece of a huge puzzle. And if you put one by one together, finally, you get the final picture.
Mm-hmm.
For example, why they found coca and tobacco in Egyptian mummies. Coca is only growing in the Andes. There must have been a connection, definitely. Or how comes in Guinea, in Western Africa, there is a granite mountain, there is a half portrait of a woman carved in the mountain, and it is 150 meters high, Mark.
Where is that in Africa?
But the face is not black. In Guinea, close to to Mali.
Oh,
Western Africa. I send you a photo.
Well, that could be made by the Atlantis, right?
Of course, because the face is definitely not black African, and 150 meters, and Professor Pitoni, an Italian geologist, was there, and he was checking the ground of that mountain, and he said, because of this sinking of the earth at the bottom of the statue, of the half portrait, this was done at least 10 to 12,000 years ago. 150 meters in feet, I don't know exactly, but I think maybe one of your listeners can tell you how many feet. 150 meters. It's huge. Very, well, very
about
big.
About 400 and feet or so. Well, yeah, well, in ancient times, Mali, that would have been right on the shore of a big inland sea, the Triton Sea, they called it in those days, and that's where Atlantean traders used to come sailing and trading their goods. That's where the Tuareg people started. They say they were Atlantean traders that came into the Triton Sea, and at that point their main headquarters, which is in the Ahaggar Mountains, was an island, and it had three huge peaks that looked like a big trident because that was a symbol of their continent of Atlantis, and now since that sea is drained, they've carved out the inside of those mountains apparently, and they're full of artifacts from Atlantis. But they don't let you come near them because you'll they're afraid that, you know, Western man's going to exploit them, and they're very sacred to them. But people have gone inside those mountains, and that's what they say, you know. So it's all these legends that are out there that, you know, I'm very anxious to be able to prove that this is really true, you know, and so that we can really start teaching history the way it should be taught, you know. One thing I was very interested, Klaus, when I listened to your YouTube video is that you mentioned your James Churchward's work, the Lost Continent of Mu, and the Nakhel tablets that he get a lot of his information from, and you mentioned that you had a friend that had actually seen these tablets. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, he was in India and he saw those plates, and next time when he is coming down, he might get the allowance to make some photos. But they were also found by William Neven, a British living in United States mineralogist who did research for new minerals in Mexico. In the valley of Mexico, he found under three sediments three different civilizations, and the most advanced one was the deepest one, and he found about 2,000 plates with the same symbols like Churchward saw in India. And we are now just researching through friends in Mexico where those 2,000 plates were gone.
So how did your friend find this monastery that has the knockout plates in it?
In the south of India. He was talking. He was visiting, I think, at least 20 times India, and finally he found someone who showed who brought him to the right temple.
And it's in the south of India.
And they in south of India, and they call the plates Nakhal. And when I was in Hawaii, the spiritual leader in Hawaii, Haleaka, she told me she had a conference, and she was talking about the Nakhal plates, and she said that Nakhal means it's a very, very old original Hawaiian name, and also Maya is an original Hawaiian name.
Interesting. So that gives that means credence to the idea that they did come from Mu, right?
Yes, and she also told me that about 30 or 40 years ago, a Smithsonian made excavation in Hawaii, and they took with them several skeletons which were much taller than people from today. And they are now just trying to get those skeletons back from Smithsonian.
Good luck with that, right? you may have seen there's a map of India, 30,000 BC. It's actually, I've got it in my book that I'll send to you. But it shows India and Sri Lanka connected together, and there is one big landmass called the Pandyan Kingdom, and the Pandyan Kingdom is actually connected to Lemuria, and this was just 30,000 years ago. So apparently the belief is that the Lemurian tradition came north from southern India, or below southern India, from Lemuria. And so perhaps this is where how the Nakhal plates were able to come into India. The belief is that the Tamil people, the Dravidians of southern India, are actually the Lemurians, and they're carrying on the ancient Lemurian tradition. That's one belief.
Yes.
So anyway, this is what I talk a lot about in my books. Well, let me ask you again about Ecuador and the giants there. You mentioned that the giant was found in a place called the Cemetery of the Giants, and there are actually more giants buried there. Can you speak to that?
Yes. I'm just waiting until we have the financing. Then we are going there to excavate 3 skeletons.
And they're supposed to be, what, 20 feet tall, 20 feet long?
Right. Because until we cannot show a complete skeleton, nobody would believe us anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're going to Bolivia in order to check out a skeleton there. Is that a full skeleton that they found in Bolivia?
In Bolivia, they are not 20 feet, because there was a mistake. I think in internet it was written that I was talking about 20 feet giants in Bolivia. That's not right. In Bolivia, the skeletons they found are 2.6, 2.7 meters, which is about, I don't know in feet, sorry, at the moment.
Right. Well, that's more like 8 or 9 feet, I suppose, right?
Right, yes, 8, 9 feet.
So you're going to be going there? They invited you to come to see this, see their skeleton, and perhaps take a bone back with you to be checked out?
If I am allowed, of course. Without allowance, I wouldn't do so. Trying with official allowance to take 1 or 2 bones with me, trying to get the DNA analysis and age dating. Because the skulls are very strange. They have long skulls, but definitely not deformed. And the strangest thing is, on top of the skull, we have three bone plates. Those skulls have no bone plate. It's just like an egg. Very strange.
And so maybe they're not human skeletons? Is that a possibility?
At least no Homo sapiens.
Maybe from another planet. Maybe extraterrestrial skeletons, possibly?
Mark, I wouldn't say so until we have a DNA analysis and age dating.
Well, when are you going
to
be going?
To say, I mean...
Right.
If I would start talking about this is sure an alien or whatever, I would lose the help of some real good friends scientists.
Okay, well, I won't
because
force you
they
to
do
make
not
that
believe
commitment.
In
yeah, I think it's very important that you get the funding you need, especially to excavate those giants. In Ecuador.
Not the funding. It's not the funding. It's the help of scientists who are now willing to help me to do some research. Even they ask me not to mention their names, but they help me. And when I start putting everything strange to extraterrestrials, then they would not help. Maybe they would not help me anymore. I mean, I try to be serious, and I do not want to say something which I cannot prove, because it is difficult enough for me, and if I start saying something which I cannot prove, it's very easy to attack me.
Mm-hmm.
It's already easy, but I do not want that. Right. Of course, I agree with many things, but I am not the one who would like to say that in advance anything which I cannot prove.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally understand that. But go ahead.
Mark, they found different humans from time to time, like in Asia, they found those little people. First of all, it was also said officially that these are apes or whatever, and then finally these are really human but unknown human. So it's very hard to say something like this in advance.
Mm-hmm. Right. Do you have any plans for producing a documentary or a book about your research and your discoveries anytime in the near future?
We are thinking, yes, but it's always a time question of time, Mark, because I'm more interested to get more information and put the big puzzle together. But sure, I would like to do a book, of course. And when we go to South America, we have a camera with us, and I have already documentation material.
So you're going to be going to South America very soon, are you?
Yes, that's right, in April, next time.
And so you're going to be going down with a video crew to videotape what you see there?
No, I did it already. South America, the places I'm going now, we did it already. And when I go to Bolivia, a good friend of mine from Spain, who is German but living in Spain, he's a professional cameraman, he already offered me to join me. But in 2001, in springtime, I was with the camera team in South America, in Peru, in Ecuador, and in Colombia, and we did 28 hours of documentation.
Wow. And so what are you going to do
but
with
not,
that?
But not broadcasted or used yet.
Okay, so you're going to edit it down and then distribute it as a video?
Yeah, and we did a 1 hour videotape in 2001. Very interesting,
okay.
But it's already old, and there are many, many new informations or researches on some of the pieces. Therefore, if we would like to do it, we should make a new one.
So, in the near future, you plan to go down to Bolivia and South America again. Do you have plans of any place else that is calling you to come research?
I would like to go to Australia, and I'm already scheduled this September to Australia. And I have some new informations from Japan, where I was many times already, but not searching these kind of artifacts. Well, there are many places on this world, but you can only do one by one, step by step.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Well, your research is really amazing, Klaus, and I really applaud you for doing this work. It's what needs to be done, obviously, and it's actually going to perhaps give some credence to the work of people like myself who just studied the legends, and but we don't really have any tangible evidence to prove our theories. And so what you're doing is really invaluable as a way of proving some of these ancient legends. So I really applaud you in your work, and we'll all be rooting for you, especially to come up with that funding to go down and excavate those giants in Ecuador. That'll be fabulous.
Yes. Thank you, Mark. I sent you my catalog. There you can see the 470 pieces with photos, but only in German text. I have a rough English translation. I will send it to you that you see some of the artifacts we found until now.
That would be fabulous, Klaus. Also, include your mailing address so I can send off that book to you. And then we can just communicate over the internet. So, well, thank you so much for coming on.
Anybody of your listener has a question, please send it to me and I will answer them.
Okay. Yeah, well, I might have a few myself, Klaus. So,
okay,
well, thank you
anytime,
again for being
Mark,
on.
Anytime. You're welcome.
Yeah, well,
maybe
come back on in the future when you've done some more research and excavation, and we can talk some more. So, because it's really fascinating work you're doing.
Sorry, my English today, because for me it's already late. I'm up from 5 o'clock in the morning. So next time I will be more concentrated. Okay.
No, you did great, Klaus. You really did. And thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, bye for now. So next week, another interesting show. We've got Dr. Robert Hieronymus, who's actually the host of 21st Century Radio, and he's been involved with secret societies and conspiracies and all kinds of things for many, many years. And he's the authority on secret societies and Freemasonry and Rosicrucians and how they played a part in the founding of America and how they played a part in the choosing of the seal of the United States and the pyramid and so forth. So you're not going to want to miss that. And so we'll see you next week, same time, same place, and have a wonderful, wonderful week. And always remember, the Holy Grail is always right inside of you. Bye for now.